DJ Sixsmith and WFUV alum Spiro Didis here on One on One, New York's longest-running sports call-in show. HBO is a brand-new documentary detailing the life of the historic figure Marty Glickman. We're now joined by the director, Jim Friedman. Jim, you're new to movie making. You had the distinct pleasure of working with Marty Glickman during his career. What was it like putting this all together, and where did you get the motivation to start?
I got the motivation to start by the fact that I used to work for Marty when I was 17. I produced his radio show on WNEW, one of the first all-sports call-in shows in the nation. And I would be in New York, and you know, it was the greatest thing in the world. And when I moved, I went to Washington University in St. Louis and later moved to California. People would sit around and say, "What's the best job you ever had?" And I said, "I worked for Marty Glickman producing his show." And I would be met with, "Who's Marty Glickman?" And I was just stunned that outside of New York, people didn't know this man or his story. You know, it's a very New York-centric point of view when you grow up here. And I couldn't believe it. And a few years ago, I've been a working writer in Hollywood for many years, and my writing partner had her second child and wanted to take some time off. And I thought about doing this documentary on Marty, mostly because, A, his story is incredible, and, B, this is a man whose life story needed to be told and shared. Marty never really got the national recognition he should have gotten for many reasons, none of them his fault. And I always felt that this film could share his story nationally and he could get a little bit of that national fame, what I would have endeavored upon would have been a success. And that's how I feel. It's being so well received. And I hope Marty's looking down and smiling because his story is going to be known to people all over the country now. Actually, with HBO, it's all over the world. So I'm very excited about that. I'm very proud that I got a chance to do that for him.
Jim, what was it like? You know, those of us who were fortunate enough as FUV students to work with him, you know, to sit with him in those workshops where he'd come in and critique our work, you know, we knew a little bit about Barney, what he was like to deal with one-on-one. I'm curious for you as a 17-year-old what it was like to work for him.
You know, people ask that question, were you intimidated? And I remember the first time I met him, it's like, oh, my God, that's Marty Glickman. For me, I knew him as the Giants announcer, and it depends how old you are. My dad knew him as the Knick announcer. My younger friends know him as the Jets announcer. That's how you know him. But he put you so at ease, and he wasn't very good with names. He always, for some reason, he always called people kid or laddie. Why a Jewish guy was using that Scottish phrase laddie, I have no idea, but you know, he'd say, "Kid," you know, Costas is always, Bob is always telling me, you know, he'd say, "Kid, you know, come over here." And he was just one of those guys that was a regular guy, and he put you at ease. But Marty also did not suffer fools lightly. And he had a very, as you guys know, he had a very specific way of broadcasting. He wanted to share that information so people would do it the right way. He couldn't stand when people, broadcasters, talk too much. He wanted economy of language, of don't use more words than you need to. And when I wrote the narration for this film, I listened to my Marty Glickman voice in my head and really cut down the language so it's as sparse as it could be, because that's how he would have wanted it. And when it came time to have a title, I couldn't find a title, and I wanted something that just embodied who this guy was. It was actually Elliot Gould gave me the title, who's in the film, and he said, "Just call it Glickman." And I said, "That's perfect." And it so embodies who he was, because this is a guy from that World War II generation. They didn't brag about themselves. No one knew he was a world-class athlete because he never talked about it on the air. How many broadcasters today, if they had that background, would be saying when they do the games, "When I played, I..." He thought the game was the thing, and it was almost sacrosanct to him. You know, he had an expression I'm sure you guys know. The only one who tunes in to listen to the broadcaster is the broadcaster's mother.
Every time.
Yes, there you go. And you know, he was very critical, but in a positive way. It was always to make you better. And I remember Charlie Steiner told me that he got a call from Marty. He didn't know Marty Glickman. Charlie was doing like USFL football games, if people remember that far back. And he said, "Come on over, we'll go over your tapes." Charlie brought over his tapes, and he said he learned more in the 3 hours Marty taught him that day than he had in the previous 15 years of his career. I said, "That's unbelievable." I said, "What's the main thing you learn?" And he said, "The main thing Marty taught me that day was modulation." He said, "I was broadcasting from an exciting point of view, a 1 to 10 scale. I started at a 10. Marty said, "What do you do when the game gets exciting? You have nowhere to go." And Charlie never, to that point, had thought of it in those terms. So Marty Glickman orchestrated a broadcast, and it opened up all that. So Charlie realized, now when a game gets exciting, I have somewhere to go. It seems like the simplest things in the world. I mean, you guys would know this. He was always telling people on radio in football, give the down, give the time on the clock, the simplest things, so people are tuned into what you're talking about. And that's what made him great. He gave the basics all the time.
You mentioned Marty's athletic career. Long before he was a broadcaster, he was the Flatbush Flash. How much did you know about his athletic career before you started this documentary, and what was it like chronicling all those years from high school to Syracuse and even a minor league football stop?
I knew absolutely nothing except he had been replaced on the relay team, so I knew he had to be on some level a world-class runner. But to watch that and to find that football footage, and, you know, he's a little guy. He's 5'8", 160. I mean, even back then, that small. And he was one of these guys that just was a natural athlete. He always said he was the fastest kid on the block, and it gave him an advantage in any sport he played. Well, he was able to use that as a runner, and to find footage, I may have told this last night at a screening you guys were at, there was footage of a race, and I didn't know what it would look like, and it was very grainy and black and white on a bad videotape. And then I got it transferred to 35 millimeter nitrate stock. And it's this crystal clear race from 1935. And you see him running. You see how fast he was. And it's impressive.
You know, I'm listening to you talk about, you know, Charlie Steiner's recollections. And I'm just, you know, it takes me back to being in the workshops and, you know, one-on-one phone conversations with Marty. And the other interesting part last night at the screening was a woman after the screening finished raised her hand and just wanted to comment, and she said, look, I'm not a sports fan, but watching this documentary was so powerful and moving for me. He really had a profound effect on people, you know, his personality, the way he broadcasted, the kind of person he was. What's the reaction been like for you, for people that have seen it so far?
That's been, Spiro, one of the most rewarding things for me. I went to many festivals, actually not that many, but the ones I went to, you see these women who had been dragged there by their husbands to see what they think is a documentary about a sports announcer. And that's not really, Marty's story is so beyond that. And there's so many poignant human elements to what he had to overcome in his life, and he overcame them, that it's the women who come up to me after the screening as much or more than the men who are so touched emotionally by this guy's story and how he not only overcame these obstacles, he did it with style and grace.
DJ Sixsmith and Spiro Dedis here on One-on-One, New York's longest-running sports call-in show, talking with Jim Friedman, the director of Glickman, the brand-new documentary on HBO. And Jim, obviously such a big part of Marty's life was the 1936 Olympics and everything that happened in Berlin and being Jewish and going over to Nazi Germany. And the way that the story was told is that the Germans were going to put in some runners, but that's obviously not what you believe and not what it was really all about. So what was it like digging into the truth and telling what really happened there in Berlin?
You know, the absolute truth is no one knows exactly what really happened in Berlin, but you can piece history together and come up with a very damning expose on Avery Brundage, the former head of the U.S. Olympic Committee, Dean Cromwell, the assistant track coach on the Olympic Committee. And basically, these were the Olympics of Nazi Germany and Adolf Hitler, and he was espousing the belief of Nazi Aryan supremacy, only to see the American black athletes led by Jesse Owens, Ralph Metcalf, John Woodruff, smashed to smithereens, Marty's word in the film, which I love, smithereens. I'm trying to bring it back, fans. His myth of Nazi Aryan supremacy by dominating the games and winning all the gold and silver medals in track and field. The next scheduled race was the 4x100-meter relay. Marty Glickman and the other Jewish runner on the team, Sam Stoller, were scheduled to run. And the day of the race, and it was said, by the way, the U.S. team was so favored they would win by 15 yards. The only way they would lose is if they dropped the baton. So it was a foregone conclusion that Marty Glickman and Sam Stoller, two Jewish runners, would be on that victory podium, which was abhorrent to Adolf Hitler. So some people believe that it was track politics, and Dean Cromwell wanted to keep his two USC runners, who Marty had beaten in races before, and Sam Stoller had also, by the way. And some people believe it was Avery Brundage wanting to appease Adolf Hitler and telling the U.S. coaches that they were going to be replaced with this bogus story about the Germans hiding their best sprinters to upset the American team in the race. Well, this is an absurd lie because in order to be world-class sprinters, you can't have secret runners. They had to have run, and it would have been, you know, known. So I came down on the side of Marty in this point of view, and one of the major reasons I did, besides he was in the room, and I also have, I wasn't able to put it in the film, but Mac Robinson, Jackie Robinson's older brother, who was another Olympic sprinter, was also in the room, and I have audio tape confirming Marty's story. But 2 years after the Olympics, when the Nazis were building the German embassy in Washington, D.C., they awarded the construction contract to Avery Brundage's company. If that doesn't sound like a payoff, you know, I don't know what does.
It's amazing, that story, how a couple of 17-year-old kids could be cheated out of their dream. The other big part of Marty's legacy, of course, is his work with kids, you know, whether it be sports camps or broadcast students, you know, like some of us were fortunate enough to be a part of. The part of his relationship with Marv Albert, you know, you speak with Bob Costas in the documentary. We see Mike Breen, some of the biggest names in the business. But his impact on Marv is really profound. And what sense did you get? I know it was an issue getting Marv to sit down. You finally got him. What sense did you get from him in terms of the impact that Marty had, not only on his career but his life?
Well, first of all, Marv was the 14-year-old ball boy for the New York Knicks, and he introduced himself to Marty and he said, "Can you help me? I want to be an announcer." And Marty helped anyone who asked him. And Marv said, you know, Marty started teaching him, and he would walk, he would talk like Marty, he'd walk like Marty, he'd answer the phone like Marty, and he broadcast like Marty, which was problematic. So Marty and Marv worked on getting Marv to develop his own style. And Marty in the film says he did eventually stop being Marty's clone. And, you know, you can see, Marv told me, I think it's in the film, that before every broadcast, football, he still listens to tape of Marty Glickman just to get those basics down and when he does, you know, the radio games. And that's an amazing thing. Think about that. Someone's been gone that long and he still goes back to touch base with that. And as far as personally, you know, Marv said Marty Glickman was a second father to him. And I said, how did your father feel about that? And he said, my father completely got it and was very secure and loved the fact that I had that mentor. And what a mentor. And Marv really is the guy that Marty mentored specifically, who made it big. One of my favorite things in the film that fans of the film have really loved, I cut three basketball broadcasts at Madison Square Garden, Marty Glickman in the 50s, Marv Albert in 1970, and Mike Breen in 1992, I think. And I make it sound like one play, and you hear the broadcasting tree of Marty Glickman go from him to Marv to Mike Breen. And it's just thrilling to hear that because you just see it. I mean, if ever you wanted proof of Marty Glickman's influence on this business, that's it.
That was definitely one of the best parts of the movie, to see all those guys continuing on Glickman's legacy. And you go into so much about his career, but to see those guys each decade after decade, what does that say to you about just the profound impacts he had, not only on New York, but on broadcasters like Spiro and Mike Breen and Marv Albert?
I hear it in Spiro, too, by the way, when I listen to you. Well, you left L.A., so I don't get to hear you anymore. You know, it absolutely says that this guy affected three generations of broadcasting, not two, not one, three. Who does that? Who today, you know, what major broadcaster today reaches out and cares that much about the craft and the business of broadcasting to want to share his wealth of knowledge? It's extraordinary.
This whole process, I know it was difficult. It's been years in the making. You had some issues, but finally to have it happen here, at a place like HBO that has had such success putting together some incredible sports documentaries, how satisfying has it been? And also tell us the story about Martin Scorsese getting involved. That's, I mean, just incredible to have him back, this kind of a film.
Yeah, it's you know, I knew, I made a film, it's my first film, and, you know, I remember I was working on it, and one of my editors said, you know, who are you making this film for? Are you making this film for people who know Marty Glickman, don't know Marty Glickman? And it was a great question. I said, oh, duh, I don't know. I'm just making a film. I've never done this before. And I realized I was making it for me, but reaching out to the people who didn't know about him. So it plays on both levels. And when I started doing that, I realized if I stay true to what I feel was Marty Glickman's story, I cannot go wrong. You know, when he, one of the great things I had going for me is Marty Glickman telling a story. So when he tells the story about the Berlin Olympics, who's more articulate than what? You just stay out of his way and let him tell that great story. So I felt that what I was doing was truthful and to what who he was. I always thought I would sell the story, but I had no idea that Martin Scorsese would get involved with it. Martin Scorsese is not a sports fan, Raging Bull aside, at all. He only knew of Marty sort of as the Paramount newsreel announcer. And that's what is so gratifying, to see this film plays as a film. It's not a sports film per se, although its backdrop is all sports. It's really a story about what happens when an 18-year-old kid's dreams are crushed by racism and prejudice, to me anyway. Do they become bitter or do they thrive? Marty Glickman not only thrived, he used sports as a way of transcending the differences in the divisions in race, class, and religion. So the way I got involved with Scorsese was Ari Emanuel, the head of William Morris Endeavor, read about the film after it played a festival, called me up, asked to see it. I'm in his office 1 week later. He says, you know who should see this film? Martin Scorsese. And I'm sitting there. I can't believe what he's saying. I leave. I go home. I tell people that. And they go, yeah, right. And 2 days later, I receive an email from Marty saying he loved the film and wanted to release it through his company on HBO. A typical Tuesday in my life, right? And it happened. You know, it was that simple. So really a dream come true and very gratifying.
DJ Sixsmith alongside Spiro Didis here on One-on-One, New York's longest-running sports call-in show, talking with Jim Freeman, the director of the brand-new documentary Glickman. And speaking of HBO, Marty did so much for home box office when it first began, from bringing Wimbledon aboard to broadcasting marble tournaments and God knows what else. How fitting was it that this documentary is going to play for HBO after everything Marty did for them?
It's come full circle. By the way, I forgot to mention it will be on HBO Monday. It premieres August 26th at 9 p.m. I was worried, you know, if I had had to sell this to Showtime or something, would they have cut the HBO section out? Because he was so instrumental in starting this company. So I think he's back home where he belonged, and that makes me feel great too.
Jim, I know you got to run. I just want to say on behalf of all the FUV people and the students, thank you. I mean, you did Marty justice. He would have been proud to have this film represent him. And, you know, it was really emotional to see. So thank you.
I appreciate the kind words, Spiro. Thank you, guys. DJ, thanks.